Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. Now, I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Have no fear. The doctor is here. Doc Stanley. Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports In Depth for this show. And here's another Sunday. We open every show, whether it be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, with John Coltrane's Dear Lord. We open with a prayer as we stop. Radio, Lady Deirdre Shuler, who helped in getting George Foster here and also took care of our intro. And we also send our condolences to George's wife, Sheila, that she lost her father a couple of weeks ago. And I remember she called me when we were covering the last Jet preseason game. And I was talking to her a good 15, 20 minutes because Deirdre had said, you know, that Doc, give Sheila a call. She can get George Foster on the show for you. And I said, man, she's showing a lot about George Foster. So I said, hey, so George is your cousin, huh? She said, no, George is my husband. And the one we all want to get married to, but she won't even give us a day or time outside of Harold, the first lady. Something must have happened. You know, Mr. Foster lost his father-in-law a week or so ago, so maybe things got discombobulated right here. But we still have some more time, so we're still looking for him to join us. 1977, National League MVP, hit 52 home runs, the first man since Willie Mays, who had done it in 1965. You know, Willie Mays, had won, you know, when George Foster hit 50 home runs in 1977, George Foster was only the third man in National League history to hit 50 home runs. Willie Mays had done it. Foster had done it. And Ralph Kiner had done it. When Willie Mays hit 52 home runs in 1965, he and Ralph Kiner were the only National League players to ever hit 50 home runs more than once. When Mays hit his 51 home runs, everybody says, thanks to you, Rosie. When Mays hit, in 1955, Willie Mays hit 51 home runs. He was the youngest man in the 20th century in the history of baseball to hit 50 home runs. He was supplanted by a few months by Prince Fielder. But when Willie Mays hit his 51 home runs in 1955, he was the youngest man ever in Major League history to hit 50 home runs in a season. And he was on his way to 50 or more in 1954. That was the year before. He hit 41 home runs. But DeRocher had asked him to cut down on the long ball. And they didn't know if it was a situation of he felt that in the 50s, the pressure and the climate of a black man going toward the all-time home run record of Babe Ruth would have been too much of a pressure factor of the type of stuff that would come. As you know, Hank Aaron started hitting depth sets and stuff. But on the other hand, Mays did wind up winning his only National League batting title. I don't understand. I think Willie Mays may have been one of the few guys that nobody would have had a problem with his pursuit on the all-time home record by Babe Ruth. But we're looking for Mr. Foster to join us, and I'm thinking maybe there is some problems or complications, but we still got some more time here. But George Foster will join us.
Yeah.
Rudy, real quickly, you join us. Yeah. Your thoughts on George Foster, 1977, 52 home runs, MVP, part of the Big Red Machine. You're a baseball guy. Some thoughts and talk about the man who wielded black beauty like some sort of magic wand.
Well, my deal with Big George, Doc. You know, I've spoken to a number of pro athletes, and, you know, they've told me about what it's like to be in what they call the zone, where if you're a baseball player, the ball just looks so big when it's coming into you where it looks like you could just see it. It looks like a big beach ball. Where if you're a basketball player, the hoop just looks so big, like you just throw the ball in the ocean. And that's the type of season that Forster had, Doc, in 77. Like you said, 52 home runs, 149 ribbies, and he could just do no wrong in that 77 season.
No, and also he had a .320 batting average. And your Forster average in a 3-year period, 40 home runs. The amazing thing about that, you know, so did Jim Rice. But when Jim Rice averaged his 40 home runs for 3 years in a row, he became the second man and the first African American to do so. And at the same time, the stats that went with that, it's only he and Lou Gehrig ever did. Not only did he average 40 home runs, but he averaged a .300 batting average. He averaged scoring 100 runs. He averaged driving in 100 runs. He averaged 25 doubles and 12 triples and 200 hits.
Well, that's
that
a special accomplishment.
Well, I'll say with Jim Rice, you know, the other thing with it is that it really shows his extra base power, the fact that he was able to average that many triples when he wasn't that speedy of a guy.
In the right place in Fenway Park, but per se, Rudy, it was a banjo ballpark.
That's what I'm saying. But it's hard to hit a lot of triples there to an extent because if you're a right-handed hitter, you know, if you pull a lot, it'll go against the wall. So it's very hard to even get doubles hitting against the left field wall, you know. But that show he had power to all fields because he had to hit them up in that gap over there, you know, in that little corner over there in center field.
And Rudy,
Rudy,
we're going to stop talking about Jim Rice and joining us, ladies and gentlemen. Is the 1977 MVP, 52 home runs, .320 batting average, wielded black beauty like some sort of magic wand. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to the one and the only Mr. George Forster.
What's up? Who's Jim Rice?
How you doing?
Who's Jim Rice?
Who's Jim Rice?
Hello, Mr. Forster.
Hello.
Gentlemen, George Forster in 1977 became the first man since Willie Mays. And Mays in 1965 hit 52 home runs. George Forster hit 52, .320 batting average, 149 RBIs. He hit 400 his first year in the major leagues. I mean, okay, so he didn't hit a lot of bats, but hit 400. You came up, Mr. Forster, as a center fielder, am I correct?
Well, I played center field in the minor league, but coming up with the Giants, you know, nobody's going to take Willie Mays' spot. So he was my idol. He was my idol growing up. I wanted to be like Willie Mays.
Mm-hmm. Well, how was it, you know, here you are, your idol. You're playing with him. You're around him. How was it being around Willie Mays?
It was exciting because we learned a lot about the game, and he was, I guess, more than I thought. You know, you have dreams, but that dream was the true happening was much better than the dream. And just having Willie Mays around, you know, you're going to get better and better. Just watch him play. I mean, you get mesmerized just watching him out there play.
And you came up, too, you know, in 1969. So, you know, Willie, per se, was somewhat on the decline, but you know, people still say he still was a marvelous baseball player at that sort of advanced age.
Well, he knew the game, so he may not have been as fast as he had been before, but he knew how to play to certain hitters. But I was up to stay in 71, but 69 I had come up the latter part of the year, and I got a chance to meet Mays, Bond, McCovey, Jim Ray Hart, and all those guys.
Man, you were slugger among sluggers. You go to Cincinnati, and the story that I had heard was that Sparky said I gotta get this guy in line. In fact, he said Sparky had said that had you been on the Dodgers, there'd have been no need to tear down that field because you'd have knocked it down with your line drive.
Yeah. Well, I love playing the Dodgers because I had an opportunity. I had a tryout with the Dodgers. Released their organization, and I didn't get a chance to get signed by them, but then I get signed by the Giants and eventually traded to the Reds. But it was always a great rivalry, the Reds and the Dodgers.
Mm. Really? Why was that?
Well, it just the going back in history, the Dodgers and the Reds are always knocking heads and very competitive, and with Lasorda there and Sparky coming from California, of course he wanted to beat the Dodgers.
Mm. You played with some great teammates, and I'm looking at you: 77, 52 home runs, 149 RBIs, 78, 40 home runs, 120 RBIs. 79, 30, 98. You played with some really great teammates. I mean, great players. You yourself, Pete Rose, Johnny Bench. You also had Joe Morgan. How was it like?
Tony Perez.
How was it like playing with those guys, Mr. Foster?
Well, it was great because those guys knew how to play the game.
Yeah.
Of course, Joe Morgan, two-time MVP. You have Pete Rose, batting title, of course, have the most hits of all time. Tony Perez, one of the best clutch hitters in the game. Johnny Bench, a power hitter, win RBIs and home run titles. But I learned a lot from those guys, and I try to go out there and emulate and be able to compete. And that team was a team that knew what to do and worked hard doing it.
You said you learned a lot. I guess it's about winning. Some things that you learned from your teammates, example-wise.
Well, take Tony Perez, learning how to hit with two strikes. With Pete Rose, learning how to be disciplined up at the plate. Joe Morgan, how to be aggressive. You take Johnny Bench, how to hit for power. And then once you get with Joe Morgan again, hitting for average. So being able to hit for power in average and being a clutch hitter, that's something that I strive to do day in and day out.
Well, I think that's the thing that separated you and made you such a great hitter, because you were that kind of guy in the mold of Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Ted Williams, the Magic. You were a slugger, but you also got a hit for average. So if a pitcher kept you in the ballpark, he still wind up. You wind up on second base or third base. Go ahead, Dusty. You got a question, Mr. Foster?
Well, the thing is that as you're speaking, Mr. Foster, I had a Destino Lloyd Jr. here, a fan of yours for millenniums ago. you always knew. I'm assuming that you always knew that you could hit for power, even though you could hit for average. You always and being teamed up with all these greats that we just finished mentioning. It only enhance your home run power, because at one time there, correct me if I'm wrong, over 50 home runs, and that came from within you, in the same community of the other power hitters. I mean, am I correct?
Well, it's correct. Starting in the minor leagues, I was a good average hitter. I didn't hit for a lot of power, but as I come up and meet like Mays or then different hitting instructors and then Bobby Bonds, I started to hit for power and then started putting that hitting for power and average together. But when you have guys who hit for power in the lineup behind you, the pitcher's going to give you more fastballs to hit. So having a Johnny Bench or a Tony Perez behind me is going to enhance my chances of getting more fastballs to hit and my just striving to hit the ball with authority.
I think there's a lot of modesty there, though.
Did you believe that, you enhance this phrase of your favorite bat, the Black Beauty? I used to see it, and I used to say, how the heck can he hit home runs with this bat that had such a skinny handle, and it never broke? I mean, what was with that magic with that bat, the Black Beauty?
Well, my fingers are short, so I wanted a thin handle bat so I can get that better whipping action. Guys with longer fingers can use a thicker bat, but that bat was solid. It was 35 inches long and 35 ounces, so it was a solid bat.
Did you use that model in the minor leagues? And when did you and Black Beauty meet?
I started using that in 1973 when I was in the minor league. So then when I was brought back up to the major league. I like that model bat. I like the balance and everything. From 74 on, I use it in the major leagues.
Was it a Louisville Slugger?
Yes, that's all they had at that time, Louisville Slugger.
Yeah,
but it had great wood. With 35 ounces there, it's solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, Mooney.
I just wanted to find out.
Back to the major leagues?
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to know is, Mr. Foster, was there an advantage in the fact that you used a black bat? I remember a couple other players I saw use. I remember, I think, Willie Randolph I saw a couple times using a black bat. Was there an advantage to it being black, with the color?
Well, at nighttime it was an advantage because the outfielders or the fielders wouldn't be able to get a good jump on the ball because they couldn't see the black bat going through the hitting zone.
Mr. Foster, there's a lot of modesty to you. Whether you could see the ball through the hitting zone, they couldn't see it even by the time you hit it, it was coming at them like a bullet. And because somebody's throwing you a fastball doesn't mean you're going to hit a fastball.
What's that question of the great George
Walker? Well, I told him that it didn't really matter if they saw it or not, it's going to be over the fence.
Doc, I want to ask a question.
Rooney, you go first, and then Lady A has a question for Mr. Foster.
Oh, no, she can go ahead. I already asked. I'll come back.
Let the lady go.
My question to Mr. Foster. How you doing, Mr. Foster? Lady A. My question to you was, who is one of the most difficult pitchers you faced?
J.R. Richards, if you guys recall, he played for Houston Astros, about 6'8".
Oh, yeah.
Good fastball and good slider, so he's one of the tougher one out there. If he didn't have a stroke, he would have had numbers to make the Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's true.
He was great, J.R. Richard, he was. May I please ask my question of George Foster now?
Go ahead, Winnie.
George Foster, welcome to Sports in Depth Nation, Mel Smith, Jr. I have a two-part question, Mr. Foster. Number one, I just wanted to say that many people don't know, but outside of your outstanding baseball ability, you were also a star in football and track in college, correct?
Well, in high school, I only had gone to college for 1 year, but in high school, I played some football, I ran track, but, not as good as I played baseball.
And then the other question is, as far as piggybacking on Lady A's question, Mr. Foster, as far as Pure Heat, where would you and what was your mindset when you were going up to the dish against Goose Gossage?
Well, Goose Gossage is the guy that you want to be able to, knowing that he has a good fastball and good breaking ball, is being able to put yourself in a situation that you're going to get a good fastball to hit. And you can't let him intimidate you because he's coming more sidearm. But this guy is aggressive. Just try to hit the ball back through the middle against him because he throws so hard that you don't want to try to pull him, and you want to wait longer because he has a good breaking ball. But Goose Gossage was a tough guy, but he was more of a relief pitcher compared to JR. He was the starter.
Doc Stanley, Sports Dev on the Blake and the Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Dev, the show. We have the legend voted as one of the 100 greatest baseball players in the history of baseball, the greatest right-hand slugger in the history of the Cincinnati Reds, the one and only, the master of the Black Beauty, Mr. George Foster. We have C-Wing, did you want to you have a question for Mr. Foster?
Yes, quick question. Welcome, Mr. Foster, sir, to the Sports in Depth show. I have one quick question. Who gave you the nickname the Destroyer?
Well, it's really the bat that you call the Destroyer, but it probably had come. Pete Rose was known to give nicknames to players because I would go out there and destroy a pitcher's ERA. And I guess that's where it had come from.
Mr. Foster.
Charlie Horst.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Mike.
Mr. Foster, I have a quick question for you. I'm sitting back listening to the names that you're throwing in the sport of baseball at the time. It's definitely probably one of the signature names of the sport were around at that. You played in a wonderful era. My question is, somebody such as yourself, the success that you had in baseball, and to look on today's game, playing with the group that you played with, and looking at how do you feel about the state of the game now, post-steroids and everything else? What are your feelings on the overall game of baseball, and how do you think the athletes compare today to the generation that you played with?
Well, they say the generation of today, they're stronger and faster, but I may agree with that, but I don't think they're smarter. You find that they don't really know the game as well as they should know the game, and you see them out there making a lot of mental mistakes, and it comes from the not being developed and not watching the guys. You don't have as many veteran players out there, so you don't have anyone to really watch, you know, seeing how to play correctly. So I don't, and then you see the guys go up to the plate. They don't have a game plan. You know, you have guys like Willie Mays or Tony Perez to teach you things that help you become a better player. But they don't have as many today as they had before. Like I said, they may be stronger and faster, but I don't think they're smarter.
Even now, I overheard you say when you were playing with Willie Mays, it like almost like being shell-shocked for a minute when you first started playing. Here you idolize this man. When you were playing side by side with him, when you against him, whatever, did it bring out the best in you? You know, again, you could learn on the job, you could learn by your coaches playing, but when you're playing in the presence of someone like that, did that bring you your game to another level as well?
Yeah, I think it was the opposite because he's the captain of the outfield, and like usually the outfielder is going to call for the ball when they feel they can get it. But Willie Mays never did call for the ball, so you have to take it for granted that he's going to catch the ball. So I was a little intimidated because I had nightmares thinking I may run into Willie Mays. If I ran into Willie Mays, that'd been the last day in big leagues for me.
You know, Mr. Forster, you play with so many colorful personalities. Who was the most animated of the bunch? I'd love to know that. You play with so many colorful personalities. Who's the most animated?
I would have to say Pete Rose was. He was a guy that he could talk the game from 24 hours a day. And no matter what, he knows every pitcher on every team. He knows batting averages, whatever numbers that you need to know, he would know. And I just love listening to him talk baseball. And he talk about, you know, what you need to do to maintain a good career, talk about longevity, talk about consistency. For a man to average 200 hits per season for over 20 years, you know, he knows something about the game. So Pete Rose would be he was the guy that started at second base, went to the outfield, came to third base, and he was an all-star at every position he played.
Yeah, Pete Rose was an all-star in the infield, outfield. And then they told the story. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake River Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Depth of the show. The great George Forster. Mr. Forster, by no stretch of the imagination, we want to let you know how excited we are, how honored we are. I have some people from Brazil who just learned baseball through you. There is no
way. I love
way.
To go to Brazil. I heard that's a pretty country.
Mr. Forster, Brazil has beauty in all shapes and forms. It's a great country. The people are really a very friendly, hospitable. And outside of Africa, Brazil has the second largest populace of people of African descent outside of Africa. And it's a place that you would love. You would love that. It's amazing that they don't really play any baseball there. Mr. Ross, a question that really has to be asked, and you know, we're going to go mic on, lights up, so we're going to be on a lot longer. And this is your platform. There's something you want to say, something you want to convey, you go ahead and do it. This is, as far as you're concerned, this is the George Forster Show. And a question I know that's been redundantly asked to you is you know, your feelings on Pete Rose being banned from the Hall of Fame.
Well, I feel that once they get a commissioner has the intestinal fortitude to go out there and reinstate Pete Rose and he eventually get into the Hall of Fame, he's going to be the most celebrated inductee into the Hall of Fame. And I feel Pete Rose is a guy that, you know, they exonerate people for murder and whatever crimes that are committed, but now they're keeping him out of the game because of gambling. I know in baseball it's a rule about gambling, but like I say, we exonerated people for so many years in different other categories. But I just feel Pete Rose is a great person, and he interacts with people very well. And if he's inducted to the Hall of Fame, I feel he should be in the commissioner's office, being an ambassador to the game of baseball. He'll really help grow the game, and which it needs. And I just try to encourage Pete to start doing more community outreach to get his, letting people know that there's that side, that gentle side, that friendly side, that personal side to him. And it's a, I think it's a, they talk about the integrity of the game of baseball. I think it's a black eye to the game of baseball not having Pete Rose, the number one guy of all time. The number one is for his hits. Because when you talk to people about who's the best players and you start with number two, they're going to be curious, like, you know, who's number one? And then why isn't he in the Hall of Fame? But he has the numbers to go in the Hall of Fame. He made a mistake, but, you know, many of us, all of us make mistakes, but in this situation that seemed like nobody wants to forgive. And I just, hopefully one day that somebody will decide and make that great decision and reinstate him and put him into the Hall of Fame.
It's amazing you say that. One of the great quotes from, hold on, Dust. One of the great quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King is, forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind. And, you know, I heard that Pete was also a guy that was sort of colorblind. You know, he saw you for what you were as a person. He wasn't concerned about the color of your skin as he was more so the content of your character. Any truth to that?
That's true, because when he first got gone to the Reds, and he took over second base, he took over a position of a player that was very popular on the team. So most of the guys on the team, they wouldn't talk to him. So he started hanging out with Frank Robinson, Vada Pinson, those guys, and because they said, hey, come with us. Because, like you said, he didn't see any color. He just looked at the character. And then being a teammate, you feel that, you know, everybody should accept you. But they turned their backs on him because he took the position of a friend. But like I say, Frank Robinson, those guys, you know, took him on the arm and helped him. And to this day, he doesn't see color. He just look at the character of each individual. And that's why I feel that he's a great person. And if people get a chance to really know him and not just forget about, you know, the gambling situation, just overlook that and reinstate him, exonerate him. And I just feel that he'll be able to go out there and help grow the game of baseball. And you see, like they talk about Jackie Robinson's legacy. You know, where's the legacy? They're not doing as much as they need to do to get more African-American baseball players out there on the field. And they didn't really talk about it. They have Jackie Robinson Day, but, you know, just today. But it become lip service. So when are we going to actually go out there and do what we say we're going to do?
Amazing that you say that, because there are less African-American players in baseball today than it was 20 years ago, and that's even less 20 years ago than it was then. Dusty, you know you're chopping at the bit. Mr. Foster, if you can feel it, we're all sitting here just listening and off. I got a panel here that just runs off at the mouth, but nobody has nothing to say because we're just spellbound. We're just in awe of your presence and attendance, and we really can't put into words, outside of Dusty, because you can put anything into words.
Yeah,
I'm
really
having you here. But Dusty, go ahead. Next question.
Yeah, Mr. Foster, I'm glad you mentioned Pete Rose, because he's always been one of my freaking favorite dudes. I mean, he's one of these dudes that I would hang out in the hood, man, because I know he was that type of guy, man. Eating piraguas and hang around with the brothers. But what I'm saying is that do you think or do you feel, because I made two comparisons, that he is being as punished for just the foibles of gambling as a cheater on steroids who actually blatantly cheated to enhance his record, but does not really belong in the Hall of Fame, because he came in through the back door. And some guys who have good records and didn't need the extra juice to perform, they still talk about possible Hall of Fame, but here he made one mistake. I mean, and who doesn't gamble, man? Who doesn't go out there and play a few cards, man, you know? And he's being unnecessarily unjustly, that's the word I'm looking for, unjustly punished for one mistake, and he's being put in the same category of these steroid cheaters.
Yeah, the only big difference is that in baseball they have a law saying not gambling. Gambling is against the principles of the game of baseball, but at the time there wasn't any law or rule against drugs or steroids, and this is more after the fact. But I agree that these guys are, you know, on TED, performance-enhancing drugs to enhance their performance, but there wasn't any rules against that at the time, but now they're starting to crack down on it. But it's the same thing now. You guys get suspended, like Cabrera with the Giants, you get suspended, but his stats still stand. He has a chance to still win the batting title. So, you don't really know how to apply what rules or punishments.
I have a question,
the commission responsibility of strengthening the rules and define exactly what has to be done, because it seems to be a lot of flip-flop here at the commission's office.
Oh, the commissioner, back when McGuire and Sosa and those guys were hitting 60-plus home runs a year, they knew that they were on it, but they brought back baseball. So they were excited seeing 30,000 more people in the stand. So it brought baseball back. Until then, now, you know, they saw it happening, but they only stopped when they felt that baseball was back, and then they wanted to take control.
Oh, I see. Wow.
Mr. Little Word Association, what words immediately come to mind when I say the name Johnny Bench?
Best catcher of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Foster.
Mike, hold it real quick.
Go ahead.
You next. I heard, you know what I mean, as my good friend Timothy said, rumor has it that Bench and Pete didn't get along. Any truth to that?
There's some truth, and nobody know what the reason was. Mm. I try to put it together, saying that when Pete was the captain, you know, sole captain of the team, and then when Johnny came, they become co-captain. So maybe there's a conflict in that category. And also, Pete was homegrown, and Johnny wasn't. So, but I don't really know the real reason, but I know that there was some animosity there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doc Stanley, Sports Def on the Blake with the Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Def for the show. We usually go to commercial, but we're not moving another feather because George Force is here. Gang, keep the questions coming. We're going to do without questions.
I have a quick question, Mr. Foster. Mr. Foster, yes. I have, for example, now that Dusty had brought up the steroid issue, my question to you, someone of your stature, now, for my example, my middle son is, he loves baseball more than any other sport. Now, I have, being involved with sports and a writer, I still have to play dad for a kid who loves sports, and I have to answer the question. When he asks me about baseball and wants to know about home run records and stuff of that sort, what do I say about a Barry Bonds who's been accused of using steroids and who broke Babe Ruth's and Hank Aaron's records? I mean, how do I say to him who's the better player? What records do we go on? Should I look at Barry Bonds' record as something that is the all-time greatest, or do I go back and look at Hank's? How would you approach something like that? You've been involved in the game much more so than I would ever dream of being.
Well, that's a sensitive in the sense that it's hard to say Hank Aaron is better than Barry, even though Barry has more home runs. But the key word he was accused of it. So no one has confirmed that he was accused of it. So until you get some information to that he's guilty, it's really hard to say one way or the other. But it's hard to say who's better, but I have to take a Hank Aaron because, he's all around. He did a lot, and his records, to me, just like today, a lot of people feel that Babe Ruth is the main guy, and they don't give credit to Hank Aaron. So it just become a matter of opinion, and when you start hitting 500 or more home runs, it's like it's hard to say who's the best.
What I say, they talk about Babe, and I was over Dave Anderson, Doc Stanley, Sports Def on the Blake, but the Network Rainbow, so is a Sports Def show, is a George Foster special. They talk about Babe, and a lot of the old timers say, Babe was a great pitcher, Babe was a great player. For my money, baseball doesn't start till we get the African American players in. You know, 1947, Jackie Robinson comes in, first man ever to win the Rookie of the Year when they only had one Rookie of the Year award. He wins the MVP 2 years later in 1949, past his prime per se. 1956, Don Newcomb becomes the first man ever to win the Cy Young and MVP. And I say, you know, I'm not taking none away from faith, but okay, gang, hold on. We're going to do mic on, lights off, don't nobody move. And we're going to do continuing our special. Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Network, Rainbow Soul Sports. It is a George Forster special. Don't anybody move. We're going to come right back, make a quick plug here, and continue talking to one of the 100 greatest players in the history of baseball. I think the greatest right-handed power hitter in the history of the Cincinnati Reds. The one and only, the master of black beauty, daytime and nighttime, the great George Forster. Don't anybody move. Dusty, this is for you. Don't say a word.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You are listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake. You're at another Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death of the show. It's Mike on, lights off, and the man who can light him up, the great George Forster, is our special guest. So for the next half hour, I'm also we'll be asking a question and answer session with the man who was the 1977 MVP. That was the year he hit 52 home runs, became the first man since Willie Mays to do that. Willie had done that back in 1965. He had a three-year run of 40 home runs or more. The big year was the MVP year. 52 long balls, a 320 batting average, and 149 RBIs. Hit 400 his first year in the major leagues. Doesn't matter how many times he came up. George Forster hit 400 his first year up. Yeah, Al Camino Junior College, where he was an all-around star. But like Jackie Robinson, baseball was the one he chose to go his direction in. Considered one of the 100 greatest baseball players of all time, came up as a center fielder. Lifetime record shows 348 home runs, 1,200, whoa, those are Hall of Fame numbers, 1,239 RBIs, the wielder of the magic wand, beautiful black beauty. And you know, Mr. Watson, people talk about Babe, but I've always felt, you know, look at Jackie comes in 1947. 49, Jackie wins the MVP. From 49 to 69, only four non-African-Americans win the MVP award. So, you know, as people talk about Babe, I don't think Babe played against the best. I mean, he didn't play against Satchel, didn't play against Josh. But I've always felt that Willie Mays was the greatest baseball player that ever played. You played with Mr. Mays. I just always felt that there's been, you know, you look at Willie, and he's the only home run hitter to ever lead the league in stolen base. He did that 4 years ago. You take a great player, and I think you say, okay, Hank, he was a better fielder, better arm than Hank Mantle, better fielder, better base runner. I just think if you take Willie and you match him up against anybody, Willie winds up winning the argument as the best ever. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. Even though I like him as a player, but they talk about a 5-tool player, can run, throw, field, hit for power, hit for average. Willie Mays did it all. You have some of the other guys, they did well in some of the categories, but Willie Mays, you know, he's up there in all of those categories. And I would take him to, you know, if I start a team, I want to take Willie Mays because he's going to do all the aspects. If he's not hitting, he's going to be fielding. If he's on base, he's going to be stealing bases. So he did it well in every way, shape, or form. So I would take him over all the players that I've seen. And just look through the record books. Some guys are hit for a lot of power, but not average. They hit for average, not power, or not steal bases. So Willie Mays did it all.
Amen. Vince Scully once told me that Willie Mays would have been great at any position. Harold Wester, are you still with us? Come on, Harold. Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm still here.
Question.
I'm still here, Doc.
Harold? Hoopster. I mean, anybody, we got a question for Mr. Foster.
I do. Yeah, I have one for Mr. Foster.
I have a question.
Doc.
Hold on. Okay, back up. Calm down. Everybody's excited. Calm down. He's not going to play.
I will make it brief, Doc. I just wanted to ask Mr. Foster. You know, Mr. Foster, even though obviously you could hit for great average, but also being labeled as a bona fide home run hitter, and not only that, but someone who led the entire league, is it any extra pressure, Mr. Foster, when you've been labeled as a guy who can, just change the course of a game with a single swing?
Well, the thing is, I knew that there was a difference between hitting for power and hitting home runs. A guy who hit home runs is one that doesn't hit for a good average. But I knew my hitting zone, and if the ball's in a certain hitting zone, you knowing that you make good contact, it's going to go out of the ballpark. So I didn't swing for home runs, but I knew my strike zone and hitting zone, and making contact with a ball in a certain spot, I can drive it out of the ballpark. But it was always a challenge to me when I go up to the plate, but I didn't swing for home runs. It's just trying to use the middle of the field, get a good pitch to hit, and drive it.
Would you consider yourself no, that's a wrong start. I mean, I remember Arad Carew, who to me was one of the most dangerous ball players at that plate. Would you consider him to be more dangerous, lacking home run power, as opposed to a home run power hitter like yourself who will knock it out of the ballpark? Because every time he came up to play at the plate with the Minnesota Twins and California Angels, I found that he always found a hole somewhere, I mean, no matter who he would pitch the batting against, to keep the game alive or get the runs in or even win the game. That's the question. What's the more dangerous ball player, a home run hitter or a guy who can hit for average and always keep the rally alive or go 4-for-4, 5-for-5, minus home runs?
Well, in Rod Carew's case, I look at him being the table setter. He's getting on base for the guys. He's going to drive them in. But Rod Carew, he becomes very effective when a man in scoring position from second on to third. But a power hitter, a runner's in scoring position from first base or even from home plate. So nobody can be on base, but I'm still a threat to drive in a run, drive myself in.
I see.
And Rod's case is not discrediting Rod, but he knowing his role is to get on base. But if men are in scoring position, there's a great chance of him being able to get a hit.
I see.
Mr. Foster, a quick question. In your opinion, who are your top five Major League Baseball players who you admire? Your top five.
Today's game?
When you played or prior to when you played, who would you consider the best five of all time that you admire?
I have to put Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente, Willie Stargell.
Stargell.
Yeah. But I had to put DiMaggio there, too.
The last time I saw you, it was at an affair. Doc Stanley Sports and Depth, it is the George Foster Show here tonight. And it was a affair that seen you and your wife. And at this time, everybody here at Sports and Depth and the Blake Radio Network, for Mr. Neil Blake, Lady D, Lady A, the crew here, our sympathy, and you just lost your father-in-law, though, so we're going to convey those sympathy wishes you there. And I remember Mr. Stargell. You scored the run that got y'all into the World Series against the Pirates on the wild pitch, and you made that great play in the World Series. You got a chance to play sometime against Clemente. Can you talk about him a little bit?
Well, Roberto Clemente, one of the finest outfielders and a top hitter, but he was a superstar, was an all-star, and you take each team, you know, they had three or four all-stars and superstars, and Clemente was one of the greatest ones. This guy was focused all the time, and he was a tough out. The pitchers didn't really want to face him because he didn't have any weaknesses up there. But playing the outfield, you know, he's one of the Gold Glover, So he was the top in every category along with Willie Mays. It's just that he didn't hit as much for power as Willie Mays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, him and Mays have the national record for 12 consecutive Golden Gloves. Lady A, you here? Questions keep coming.
I'm here.
I got a question for you, Doc. This one goes to you, piggybacking off what you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you brought it up because this is a conversation that just came up with another gentleman the other day.
Mm-hmm.
When you rate Babe Ruth, I mean, I was thinking the same exact thing walking through the Baseball Hall of Fame a couple of months ago. It's come up again. How can you rate, and again, not to take nothing away from Babe, I don't want to draw some negative attention towards myself for saying this, but in this day and age, there was a race barrier in baseball. So, again, I believe that real baseball profession didn't start until Jackie Robinson broke the race barrier. So the question is, how in this day and age would technology and advancements and progression of humanity, how do we still look at and how do people still look at that? Is that the case? I don't understand this. I mean,
you
guys being in a bit.
The thing here, Mike, is you have to understand about baseball. It's amazing that they will talk about, we'll say that Oscar Robertson or Joe Louis or any other, Althea Gibson, and they'll say, well, they're not. You can't compare the player yesterday against the player today because the player today is superior. But yet, white people always tell you that Babe Ruth was the greatest. It's like Babe Ruth doesn't fall into that link. And, you have to understand that the fiber of America is racist, and America's game is baseball. I mean, you look around. Why are there no jobs for George Foster and Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Reggie Jackson? Well, I mean, why is the mindset that a half-assed player is a good manager? If you couldn't play that good, then why the hell can you manage that good? I mean, so Bill White, who was the president of the National League at one time, and Mr. White resigned. And I asked him why. He said, because they're not going to change. And there's certain things that we're in the 21st century. And the New York Yankees are not even remotely thinking about a black manager while we have a black president. I mean, the fiber of this game, you understand that the gentleman, there was a pitcher that was going to be signed by the New York Giants, and that's when the gentleman, and I don't know how you can be a gentleman when you interject a racist mindset, made a gentleman agreement that they weren't going to play African-American players. Now, ironically enough, there was some belief by the Negro League players that Babe Ruth had some black blood in him. Now, Mr. Foster came to the New York Mets as one of the greatest power average hitters in the history of baseball, okay? And yet he never got the recognition he had. And when he simply said, I think it's unfair that Mookie Wilson, who was the starting center fielder, who earned his job and who was a superior center fielder to Lenny Dykstra, well, how come he doesn't get a chance to get his job back? Well, now, all of a sudden, George Foster became the bad guy. All of a sudden, it's all right in this country. If a white man can say you're treating a black man wrong, well, then he's a humanitarian. But when a black man or Hispanic man backs another black or Hispanic, he's a racist. And if you want to talk about Mr. Foster, your platform, but you were unfairly ostracized. You were unfairly, I mean, your reputation alone merited and allowed you to glide along. But you look at the game of baseball, I mean, I have to look back. Herman Franks was going to buy the Yankees with an organization back in the late 60s, early 70s, with the concept of Willie Mays becoming the player manager. And I can see why the deal fell through. But, it's something, Mr. Foster, feel it out here. But, all hell broke loose when you supported your kind here in New York City, the so-called mecca of communication. And New York City has always been a place that, for some reason, it doesn't treat their black athletes right.
Well, good point. You out there, that's what you said, I back. And it's exactly what needs to be said and heard over and over again.
Doc.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
To intervene here, it's funny because I was reading a biography of Jack Dempsey going back. Again, we're talking overall sports. We're talking about racism being a horrible thing in the United States for years now. But my point is, okay, going back, you have the same thing with Babe Ruth, even with Jack Dempsey. How many fighters were avoided that were African-Americans at that point? Okay? Now, we move on to the World War II generation. The thing that I always I have to say when they talk about the pound-for-pound greatest fighters that ever lived, okay, every ethnicity that was climbing up the American ladder, you know, they've always produced, like, in my Italian-American heritage, when we had it rough, it was 40s and 50s, we produced Rocky Marciano, Rocky Graziano, Jake LaMotta, and so on. Now, every time throughout American history, with that 100-year span where boxing was so popular, there was always an African-American that was pound-for-pound the best fighter, okay? And even more so, when we were up against, when boxing actually meant something and the heavyweight championship meant something, when Joe Louis fought Max Schmeling, okay, they would not allow another African-American to fight for the title. The minute that it meant that Max Schmeling was, they didn't want the title going back to Germany, all of a sudden we allow an African-American to step up, fight Jimmy Braddock, then move on, and he's the poster child for America,
you know,
to defeat Nazi Germany.
You say something that's so profound. Lewis could
they
not
borrowed him.
Lewis could not get a title shot unless, and we're going to get back to Foster, unless he gave 10% of his purchase for the
Jimmy
next
Braddock.
10 years to Braddock. And I remember what the late, great Eddie Robinson told me on the night that Joe Louis entered the ring against Max Schmeling. Mr. Robinson told me he listened on the radio and he heard the ring announcer say, and now the American, Joe Louis, is entering the ring. And Mr. Robinson said that was the first time he ever heard a black man called an American.
Can I get a quick question to Mr. Forster? You know, there have been some athletes who turned down hundreds of thousands of dollars to come to New York because of, you know, the New York media
and
the challenges and hassle for which that, you know, for which they represent. Excuse me. My question to you, Mr. Forster, is how did you find dealing with the New York media once you came here? And what, outside of the obvious size, what were the differences between dealing with the New York media on an everyday basis and the Cincinnati media?
Well, I look at the New York media as being like barracudas. They keep coming at you day in and day out, and they feel that, you know, they're like sharks. In Cincinnati, you know, they print what you say, but in New York, they conjure up. They try to create controversy. And if I go out there and go 4-for-4 and no home runs, they're going to say, why didn't you hit for power? If I go out there and go 2-for-4, hit 2 home runs, why didn't you get more hits? So you can't do enough. You can't do enough for them. But it seems as though that's their job. They feel that's their job to try to break players down.
Well, especially people of color. I mean, we look at the thing, and Rudy, I want you to get on deck. Hoopsters next. Mr. Chambliss said the reason why Chris Chambliss, who got fired as the world champion batting coach, and you had Willie Randolph, they were deleted from the picture because the Yankees didn't want them to get the job by deduction. Now, what you said, Mr. Forster, is not only the truth, but the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Dave Righetti and Don Mattingly, they told me the problem with New York City is exactly what you said, and you know it's heightened on African American play. If you go 4-for-4, well, it's 4 singles, no home runs. If you win 7 games in a row, yeah, but your ERA is 5.6. If you hit 10 home runs, well, 7 of them were solo shots. They're never content. And Terry Pillington told me he took $500,000 less to go to Atlanta than subject his family. And Mr. Foster, I mean, you know, in your career, you know, I know there's some terms and names that were shouted at you in visiting ballparks, and it's kind of staggering that, you know, New York can really be, you know, they talk about the most intelligent fan, but New York can show a very ugly racist side.
Oh, yeah, they can. It's just ironic. During the game, you know, they're yelling and screaming at you. Then after the game, there are people standing in line for your autograph.
For the autograph,
I remember very, very distinctly, I was coming up the bat. The bases were loaded. It was a guy. They didn't have much security then. The guy was standing on the dugout saying, you know, take me out. You bomb. And then the first pitch, I fouled back, and they said, telling the manager, take me out. He's a bomb. Then I hit a home run, a grand slam, as I'm rounding third base. He said, "That's my man, that's my man." It just shows you how fickle they were.
My brother George. Hoopsa, you got a question for the legendary George Foster. Go ahead, Hoopsa.
Yes, how you doing this evening, Mr. Foster?
Great.
All right, I want to ask you two quick questions. I want to know who your favorite player growing up, and who's the player that reminds you of yourself?
Oh, the player that growing up, Willie Mays, and today's game, the guy Cabrera, who plays for the Detroit Tigers. I love watching him play. That guy, he's up there. Hey, he has a mission to go out there and destroy the pitcher's ERA and driving those runs. And I love watching him. He has that intensity every at bat.
Yeah. Louis?
Okay. Mr. Foster, what pitcher gave you the most difficulty in your playing career? Who was it that you would just get up the bat and say, "Oh, this guy again"? Who gave you the most trouble, Mr. Foster?
Well, at first, in the beginning, I said J.R. Richards was the guy that I really have to be prepared for. He got me out more times than I got hit, but I did get key hits against him. But the guy that really, I hit the ball hard, but I didn't have anything to show for was Andujar, who had played for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And
Joaquin Andujar, okay.
Joaquin Andujar. I mean, like I say, I hit the ball hard, but it's right at somebody. So you go 0-3, 0-4, so you can't say, "Well, I hit this guy well." But this guy, he throw from every direction, underhand, overhand, sidearm, and he did a good job after he had gone to – he played for the Reds, then he went to the Houston Astros, and then he went to the Cardinals, and that's when he became a pitcher.
Yeah. Mr. Foster, here's a question I have. In regards to the hitters of today – you know, one thing that's happened, like, I believe, like, a lot of hitters have a different approach than most of the people who played during your time period, because one thing that I noticed today is that it's more acceptable for guys to have a lot of strikeouts and just go for home runs all the time rather than just trying to make contact at certain times with their swing. I mean, take a guy like, say, Mark Reynolds, this guy from Baltimore, for example. The guy strikes out over 200 times a year, you know, but he's hitting 30 home runs. And why do you think there might be a change in allowing something like that to exist now versus during the time period when you played, you know, to strike out 200 times would, you know, eliminate you pretty much from being in the major leagues?
Well, it's more accepted now. It's more prevalent. So many guys are doing that. So you had Adam Dunn, but they see that they can hit 30 or 40 home runs. But I'd say we had more pride in ourselves to not want to go out there and strike out 200 times. You want to work on become better and better. A lot of these guys, they don't care as much as for hitting for average. They look for hitting a lot of home runs, and I guess they feel that the home run hit home runs, you're going to get a bigger raise.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Foster, when I was a kid, Mr. Foster, growing up, you know, we would talk about the game with the other guys, and you know, we hear that such and such gave up 3 runs and 5 2/3. We say, "Man, such and such pitched a lousy game today." Now, Mr. Forster, you pitch five innings, 5 2/3, 3 runs is considered a quality start.
Yeah. They just changed the labeling, you know, quality start, or they're going to shut a guy down. I just feel that shutting a guy down is going to retard his development. If you have 5 or 6 innings, it's a quality start. It's going to make that pitcher or that thrower feel that now he's doing well, but he's not really doing well. We had guys who wanted to finish the game, complete the game, and that's what it's all about. It's not just go out there and have a quality start. The quality start, to me, being able to go out there and pitch 8 or 9 innings.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. Doc Stanley Sports Net from the Blake with the Rainbow Soul Center Sports is the George Foster Show. Catfish Hunter once told me one time, he said, you know, the reason why they had the guys out in the bullpen because they didn't want them in the game in the first place. And Tom Seaver said, you know, if you're really going to be a serious pitcher and your arm is going to gain any kind of strength, credibility, you got to go every fourth day and 7 innings. 2 quick questions, I'll shoot at you, and we get back to the panel. Did you have a favorite number that you wore? Why'd you wear the number you wore, and did you have a favorite number?
Well, when I came to the Reds, I didn't have a choice. That was the number that they gave me. And then with the Giants, I wanted 24, but, of course, Willie Mays had 24.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a choice. So after I had 15 for a long period of time, that became my favorite number.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, Black Beauty. I know Did you with two strikes? Did you choke up on Black Beauty, and during the course of the season, did you use maybe a lighter Black Beauty model as you got into late August, early September, or you just always use the same model all year round?
Well, I try to keep the same model. As far as weight, 35-35 all year round, but I didn't choke up after I get two strikes. I made short in my swing and focus on hitting the ball up the middle to right center compared to looking to pull the ball. But the main thing is to have good play coverage, but I didn't want to become a defensive hitter. I still want to be in a position that can drive the ball.
What kind of teammate was Joe Morton?
Oh, Joe Morton was a great teammate. Here's a guy that steal bases. He can win a game by stealing a base, win a game with his glove, with his bat. So I learned a lot from Joe. I looked at him as being my mentor.
Now, I heard Joe had was a big jazz music lover. Are you into jazz too?
Yeah, that's the great thing about that clubhouse. You had that diversity in jazz. You had Latin music. You had soul music. You had country western. So we respected everybody's taste. But for me, jazz, and for Joe, jazz, it helps you to relax. And that's what we love to do, being able to relax before the game and after the game.
Tony Perez, another fine teammate?
Oh, he was a catalyst of the ball club. He brought everybody together, no matter the white, black, lad, but he was the guy that everybody looked up to. And when he spoke, it's like way back when E.F. Hutton spoke, but when Tony Perez spoke, everybody listened.
Wow. And you also played a while with Ken Griffey Sr., correct?
Oh, yeah, he was my roommate, the best roommate. It was great having him because he was always out there trying to do better each game. And it's like we're roommates, we always talk about the game and talk about what we need to do the next game. And this guy was always had that intensity. He had a mission, had a plan, and he went out there and executed day in and day out.
The World Series. Can you talk? I mean, you made a great throw in the World Series. Your first World Series, no question, very exciting, very special.
It was special to be. You have a goal during spring training to get to the World Series, but the goal is to win the World Series. But when you get there, you want to understand that you got to play the game the same way. The same way you played the game to get there, you got to play the game the same way when you're there. Don't try to go out there and do anything spectacular. Just do the ordinary thing, maybe extraordinarily well, and just knowing what to do and when to do it. And we knowing that we were a good ball club, but during the World Series, you know, things are a little different. You have a seven-game series, and the bet who wins 4 out of 7 is going to be the champion. And that we've gone all the way to seventh game in the 75, become the world champion. You really felt good. Things that you worked on came to fruition.
Barkley Anderson won pennants, championships in both leagues. Was seen as an outstanding manager. Is that apropos to describe him?
The key to Sparky being a great manager is that he made sure that the extra men knew their role. The guys who were starting, we knew our role, but you let a guy who was sitting on the bench knowing when he's going to pinch run, a pinch hit, and then knowing how to handle your pitching staff. So he created that communication. He could be called a communicator. He always communicated well with his players so that now you're not in the dark of what's going to transpire. So you're always up on what's going to happen so you can be prepared.
I believe you have a charitable organization that you're working with?
Yeah, it's George Foster Safe Youth Network, working with inner city kids and also kids from military families. We want to be able to do something for the kids of military families that they can take their mind off the fact that their parents are away, if it's Afghanistan or Iraq, but give them an outlet. And the kids that we have, you know, they really enjoy it. And just like I say, give them something to go out and have pleasure and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Stanley Sports Network with the Blake. You're never going to go to the channel. Sports and Death is the show. George Forster here. I got a little quick plug here. Dusty, DocStanleySports.com, the Trust and Guard Sports and Death Hall of Fame. As you know, I've got some things there. I want you to check the site, DocStanleySports.com. And Mr. Forster, do you still have any more of your Black Beauty models?
No, I doubt. I wish I would have kept them, but every time I go to some of these autograph sessions, I see people with them, and I tried to barter with them, but they don't want to part with them.
Oh, as New Birth and Bobby Womack once say, I can understand it. That was a
right.
special time.
A great song.
Yeah, special time. You can probably do another. Mr. Foster, can you stay a few minutes longer? You got to leave.
A couple more questions.
Okay. All right.
Well,
so
let me ask a two-fold question.
Go ahead, Dusty.
Yeah. I have a two-fold question. And first of all, one of the things that fascinated me was Joe Morgan. And I don't know if you remember, but when he came to bat, he always flapped his elbow. And I never found out why he would do that. Did you ever get a handle on why he always flapped his elbow while he was batting?
Yeah, it was a reminder to make sure that he keeps his elbow up. So he started doing that as a reminder.
Wow.
Yeah, it you know, it looked funny, but that was just to remind him that make sure that elbow stays up.
But 90 years later, I find out what he was doing. My second question, sir. You had an extensive, glorious career. It's great. I mean, every kid's dream. When it was over, how did you adjust to civilian life, and how did you get used to not going back to training camp and know that it was over? You went on to your second life, so to speak. I mean, how difficult was it, or how did you adjust?
It was I look at it as a transition, and I still work with kids in say high school or college. I still stayed in the game as far as that, and I still, you know, doing things to condition, but I always interacted with people when I was playing, so it wasn't hard to go on from the baseball life and into the life itself, but I always interacted with people. But the main thing is staying in the game and trying to get other kids who have that dream to make it to the major leagues or make it to whatever level, try to impart knowledge to them about the game of baseball and about life.
Right. Other dudes stayed in the game as coaches and managers and minor league. Did you ever think about doing that?
I had a couple of years, but it's not really my choice. You know, you put your resume out there, but you don't get any positive response.
Any
you know, it's like Dusty Baker says, you know, when managers come in, they hire their friends, they hire their people, and the game of baseball has not changed at all from the good old country club mentality. You know, it's America's game, it has America's mindset, and you're always talking about racism. Mr. Foster, the great moments, what are the special moments and memories, you know, your special days, your special moments that stick out in a stellar career for George Foster?
Being the MVP in 1977, I didn't envision being the MVP. I just wanted to go out there and be consistent and do the best that I possibly could. Being in two World Series and winning those World Series and getting a chance to play Major League Baseball. That was my dream. And once you're there, you know, you got to work harder to stay there. But a thing that really stood out is playing in front of my friends and family in L.A. and hitting key home runs, and you know, and then your fans, you're standing up, you know, applauding you. So being now you know that you are accepted, and it is great to have that backing, having that support from your friends and family.
What does George Foster do? What would you say? Just, you know, we're a crucial. What do you want to say to the world? What do you want to say to the youth? What message does George Foster want to present and get out to the world?
Well, mainly it's being able to find a purpose in life. You know, what is that you want to do to not only improve yourself but improve your family or improve the world itself? And always try to be prepared for what opportunities that are presented to you. And being able to go out there and do the best you can day in and day out. And I always look at the fact that each day try to do a good deed, finding something to do to do a good deed. And I find if you go out there, you do a good deed, other people are going to follow. Like Michael Jackson says that, you know, look in the mirror. If you want to change the world, look in the mirror. You got to change yourself and seeing what you need to do to improve yourself. And then now follow through and try to help change somebody else through what you do.
What did baseball? You gave so much to the game of baseball. What did baseball? What imprint? What did baseball give to George Forster that he carries the rest of his life?
It proves that I'm able to go out there. You are able to go out there and have dreams, but you need to comply to principles and making it there. That mainly letting you know that you can do something, but you got to go out and work at it. You just can't just think about it. And it proved to me by working hard and working smart at something that I can make it.
Mm. Mike, real quickly before you go, you got a quick question, Mike?
Well, Doc, you pretty much took you had the question that I wanted to ask him. What his most memorable moment was? That, and
okay.
I just got my answer to that. That was really
one.
Interesting. Articulated much better than I would have, Doc.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, I want to know what Mr. Fawcett still with his championship ring. Does he still wear it? And I want to know what team favorite is a matter of his old 77 Cincinnati Reds.
It's in safekeeping as far as the awards from the game, but the main thing is the memories that helped that I guess did to be able to accomplish that. And I always think back when I listen to music, if it's Al Green or Roberta Flack, whoever, it just takes you back to the times that you were playing. Because I always listen to Al Green before the game, then listen to James Brown before just. You know, after the game. So it's just getting into that music and getting into what you had accomplished, but understanding that if you can do other things too. It just gives you that confidence that you did that, now you build on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Foster, I know you got to go. Thank you. Seems so minuscule to say. We're in awe of you. This is your vehicle anytime you want. I can't tell you the pleasure and the honor of having one of my heroes, you call me to be on my show. I remember when Stevie Wonder had that album of his, he said, on my album, Dizzy Gillespie, on my show, George Forster. I know you got to go, sir. Anytime you want to come back, please. Thank you. Seems so little to say. We are honored. We have learned, and you're always in our prayers and thoughts. You've been one of our heroes for a long time, and today you just showed us why you are. Thank you so much, Mr. Forster.
Thank you. Thanks for the platform, and thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night, Mr.
God
Forster.
Bless.
Thank you, Mr. Forster.
God bless.
God bless.
You know, gentlemen, we're still like babbling like little kids, man. You can't help it, man. You know, it's George Forster, man. You can't help it. And
sure, world champion.
It was good, you know.
Man, one more question. How did he do against Louis Tien?
Well, he just left. He just left. You know, plus he's not. Yeah, he's not answering no more damn Latin questions anyway. He told you about Tony Perez. That's enough for you to know. But we're gonna slide. You know, we'll be back here next week. This was a special show for us. Forster, 1977 MVP. As has been said yesterday and today, I was talking to my friend Marcus from the Amsterdam News. He said, and you know, it's quite conceivably he's the last man to hit 50 home runs that wasn't juiced. We'll be back. Next Sunday at this time, we'll try to get him. You know, Mr. Forster, his wife Sheila, has a show before us.
Yeah.
What's the name of that show again, Dusty?
Children's show. Aunt Jules. Aunt Jules, children's show.
Yeah, Sheila, and he just lost his father-in-law. We'll get him back. This is going to be a special. Gentlemen, we're going to leave now, leave you with three thoughts, leave your life today, you have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is space you pay for your room, or enough. Larry Hardy, who will close us out. The great George Forster, 1977 MVP, about 320 batting average, 149 RBIs, 52 home runs, had a three-year period of 40 home runs or more, was part of the big
red team. I'm surprised he hit 500.
Well, he hit career. Well, cause you know what happened? He kind of ran George. He hit 348, so he was 100 and something off. And, you know, anytime you can play with Willie Mays, I love that line. He said he had to watch out in the outfield because he didn't want to run into Willie Mays. Wasn't Willie Mays, man.
Heck no. Willie
problem,
Mays
though.
Was a tank.
Willie Mays stuff. Okay, Mike.
Good night,
Dusty. Tell everybody good night, and we're going to close it out. Tell everybody good night, Dusty,
good
in English.
Good night. Good night, Dusty.
Good night, buenas noches. Good night. That's my English. Buenas noches.
You're good tonight.
God bless everybody, and we had a great show today. Take care.
Yeah, it was real great.
Good time, guys. Have a good night and good week.
Hey, good night, everybody. Thank you for having me on.
And that's it. Dr. Stanley. Sports and Death on the Blake with an Epic Rainbow Soda channel. Sports and Death of the show. The great George Foster, part of the Big Red Machine, the man who brought Black Beauty back into prominence. And we want to thank you for being with us. And Larry Hardesty will now close us out on Sports and Death, the Blake with an Epic Rainbow Soda channel. Sports and Death is the show. From the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death Show, Sports and Death, every Sunday, 9 to 11, the Blake Radio Network. Doc Stanley and his spot. Say goodnight and trust in God.